Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and today I have as my guest Mr. Mark Presley. Hi there, Mark. How are you?
Okay, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. It's good to talk with you, and it was kind of interesting how this particular conversation has come about, that you had contacted me through Facebook and wanted to talk a little bit about creativity, and it just really fascinated me when we had a brief conversation then last evening about this. So I first of all, appreciate you as being a listener and a follower of the Magic Word Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Sure. You're welcome. Well, as I said, that this particular episode is going to be about creativity, and I kind of want to go into the specifics of your creative process and as far as trying to come up with different magic ideas and tricks and things. And so I know that over the past year or so that you've come up with a few new ideas that you are marketing to the magic community. So why don't you, I guess, first of all, go back in time and tell us kind of how that you got started with this.
With the inventing process?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, first of all, I really had no intention to get into the inventing part of magic, you know, making products and that. Mm-hmm. That kind of happened by chance. It's kind of a funny story how it all happened. It started a combination of two things. I was taking a class at a local college, and the class was called Artistic Inventions. And I thought it was really neat because, you know, the whole idea of the class was coming up with some sort of invention that was artistic, that it involved using used material, unwanted material, you know, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I had joined the class, and it was funny because the first day of class, the teacher said, okay, this is what we're doing. You have to come up with some sort of artistic invention, but it has to be working and moving, like, for example, a clock or something like that. And he said, go home after this class, and for the rest of the week, anything that you would normally throw out, bring in a box and bring it here, along with some tools and, you know, a drill, hot glue gun, you know, all the necessary things you would need to put something together. So I had done that. I kind of searched around the house, and in my work area, I already had a box full of stuff. So I just kind of added to it, brought my toolbox. And for some reason, I brought this material. I don't really want to talk about what it is because it's the whole secret of what brought my butterfly in a box to life.
Sure, okay.
So, you know, I put that in my toolbox. For some reason, I didn't put it in the other box because the teacher said, once you bring your box to class next week, put it in this box. He had a much bigger box. And he said, this is the box of crap stuff. This is the community box.
Okay. Everybody gets access to this box, right, to kind of share. Sure.
Exactly. So the whole class kind of, you know, was able to contribute, and anything anybody needed when class was in its session, if they needed something, they could kind of walk up, like say, for example, they needed a funnel or something. They could go to that box and see if there's anything, you know, like a funnel, and it's theirs. They can use it in their project. So, and then the teacher was great. His name is Daryl. And, you know, he came up with this concept of doing a class, Artistic Inventions, using recycled items. Matter of fact, he invented something for Thomas Dolby, a music contraption that he concocted, hacking into kids' toys that make noises and things.
Sure.
He came up with a way to make them musical. That's an incredible story. But back on to what was happening at the class, you know, he also said, make sure you bring a camera so you could document everything, you know, document your work, take pictures, put them on Facebook, that type of thing. So a week goes by, and I'm at my my magic club, Ace's Magic Club, and they're based out here in Chicago. They're affiliated with PJ's Trick Shop. They kind of work together. And Jeff McBride was doing a lecture at this magic shop. Well, not at the magic shop. It was at some party room where Aces does their
monthly
magic
meetings. Yeah.
Yeah, their monthly meetings. So, you know, I wanted to check him out because I'm a big Jeff McBride fan, and he did a great lecture. It was wonderful. You know, he did a nice performance. And at the end of the performance, he did this effect with the butterflies. He makes the butterflies fly over the fan, and he fans them, and they fly everywhere.
Yes, right.
And finale, the butterflies kind of fall down. Seems like there's hundreds of them. You know, and the whole room is like, oh, wow. And they're reaching up and grabbing them. And so I grab some, and I put them in my camera bag because I carry that around almost religiously because I like taking pictures, video, that type of thing. So anyway, just where I'm going at is I was really inspired by Jeff McBride in his lecture and everything. I took his butterflies, put them in a bag. Well, a few days later, I was going back to my inventions class, and I had no idea what I was going to do. You know, he said it had to be movable working art. I brought with me this tube that I had found in the garbage. It was like an alloy tube that I guess you use it for a big print press.
Mm-hmm.
And it was steel. I was going to originally try to make a drum out of that, like concoct different things on it and make it sound different, almost like a Blue Man Group type thing.
Yes.
But I was having trouble trying to think of something to do. And so I was just kind of just standing there at my work table. And for some reason, I looked down and I saw the secret material that was in my toolbox. And I was just kind of looking at it. And then all of a sudden, something clicked. And I went in my camera bag and I picked up the paper butterflies that I got from Jeff McBride's lecture. And I put the two items together. And then I started making the butterfly float around. And people in the class kind of stopped in their tracks. And they're like, whoa, how you doing that? You know, and it was pretty neat because at the same time, right when that happened, I had this unbelievable feeling where my heart just kind of sank and my eyes glowed. And I just knew right there that I had something.
Kind of a moment of inspiration.
Right. And I just started writing down as much as I could, dates. I even made a video documentation of it. And I showed Jeff McBride. He loved it. Yeah, he wanted the effect, actually. But I was, you know, trying to be really careful, make the right decisions. And my friend from Facebook, I met from Facebook, Steve Hart.
Sure.
Really kind of walked me through and helped me out with the inventing process with that. So it was pretty interesting. I don't want to take up the whole time here with my story. I'm sure you probably have some other questions as well.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, obviously, so this particular case, it was kind of like, it sounds like a improvisational comedy class in which that they just throw a bunch of things in the box and you take the thing and put on a hat or a tie or something and you become a character or something like that. So you have to come up with some sort of inventive idea and it kind of forces you to be creative. So what you're saying, I guess, is that in this invention class that you had taken is that you just kind of had a bunch of things thrown in there. It's like, let's make something from this. And so it's actually where you sit down and grind out an idea or grind out an inspiration, if you will, waiting for something to inspire you, which happened, apparently.
Right, that did happen, exactly. And like I said, I had no intention of coming up with a magic product.
Right.
I don't want to say by mistake, because I don't think really anything happens by mistake.
Yeah.
But what had happened is when I started working on the butterfly in a box, I had a lot of things happen that kind of joined together. Again, my friend Steve Hart kind of helped me out with that. I made a demo product, and I presented it to a company, and they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But they recommended, for safety reasons, that I make some adjustments, and then I was found with another challenge, like, okay, how am I going to do this? And then I figured out a way. But at the same time, when I presented the effect, it was to Fun Incorporated,
mm-hmm.
some great guys over there.
They're in Chicago, yeah.
Right, yeah, and they love the effect. But right away, when I was showing them, one of the guys there, I think his name was Tomas.
I know Tomas, sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah Tomas. Medina, right?
Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he said, well, that's kind of similar to Dancing Matilda.
Okay.
And I was like, Dancing Matilda, what the heck is that? Because I really am not like a lot of these guys where they're walking encyclopedias of magic, you know, that they're like a walking Tarbell, you know?
Yeah, right.
And I really respect a lot of magicians that could retain that knowledge.
You certainly need to have those friends in your pocket, so to speak, so that way that when you come up with an idea and you think, well, look at this, and then they could say, that is such and such idea, or that was invented in 1930-something, or, you know, like Max Maven or some people, because there are a lot of inspirations that will come to someone who has never seen a particular thing that's happened before, and they think it's a brand-new product. And that, for an example, I know that something that seems to be released on a perennial basis is the playing card prediction inside of a fortune cookie. You know,
oh,
somebody thinks that's a great idea. It seems like Magic Ink had sold that. I mean, Jay Marshall had it. I know other people had released it every once in a while, and they think, that's a great idea. It's like, yeah, but this has been done for the last 50 or 60 years. And so, yeah, like the Dancing Matilda that you're talking about, yeah, with a floating handkerchief or silk or something like that, yeah, that if you weren't familiar with something like that, then it is a fresh idea to you.
Right, and, you know, you got to be really careful because the magic community, I think, you know, is very loyal.
And absolutely.
Right. They have a thing about them where they really want to honor and contribute to the magical arts as far as who invented what.
Mm-hmm.
They really, there's a really kind of like a code that we follow. And, you know, and during that process, I kind of really didn't know about this ethics thing with inventing.
Mm-hmm.
I knew enough that I should contact the creator of Dancing Matilda, which is not a butterfly, it's a dancing handkerchief.
Handkerchief, right.
And I contacted Steve Dushek, and I told mm-hmm. him about my effect. And I was really kind of worried at first because I kind of got some advice from another magician. I don't want to say their name, but they recommended I don't contact him because he had been ripped off numerous times. In fact, when I went to his website, he kind of had a whole write-up about how he pretty much just sells to close friends, and he explains why, because, you know, he was ripped off. They knocked off a lot of his effects. So I kind of had the sense that, you know, he was kind of bitter about it.
Well, yeah, there are several magicians who have been creative, and after a while of losing ideas that have been stolen, so to speak, and put out into the community. I know John Cornelius is another one here who kind of, you know, why create something and spend all this time, effort, and money if someone else is going to rip me off and sell it, you know, cheaper and have it made somewhere overseas or whatever. And so it is discouraging, certainly. And that's one of the many reasons I think that we should honor those who are creators and support them rather than trying to, I mean, you can build on an idea, but just to take someone's idea and to, you know, rip it off basically and repackage it and call it something different that is actually someone else's idea, I don't think is quite ethical.
Right. Exactly. What I did is I, after some thought, I decided to email Steve anyway.
Mm-hmm, good.
Because I just thought it was the right thing to do. And right. If I get his blessing, fine. If I don't, it wasn't meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, I was really, really impressed and flattered. He emailed me right back, and he gave me a quote that it was okay for me. He's, you know, he wished me good luck. He said, I give permission, Mark Presley, to use, you know, my effect. And I didn't know, but in the 70s, he kind of came up with a butterfly effect, the same, kind of the same as mine, but I haven't heard much of it, and I think it was because maybe it wasn't consistent, it wasn't working right, and I came up with a method where the butterfly actually it looks like it's fluttering around, it's flying around.
There was something, again, I have not seen the effect, but kind of from what you're describing there, it reminds me of something a long time ago that was a kind of a funny gag, actually, in which that somebody had this gimmick that was attached then to their wallet. So whenever they'd open up the wallet, it looked like a couple of moths had sprung out of there, and they were kind of, you know, floating around the wallet like there's nothing in there, you know. It stinks.
I heard about that too. I don't know what it's called, but somebody had told me about that effect as well. So you know, the butterfly in the box—that's my baby. That was the beginning of the whole inventing process, and it's kind of funny because, like a butterfly, it goes through many stages. You know, it starts out as a caterpillar that goes in a cocoon and that type of thing. That's the same thing that was happening to me. I was going through all these different stages in the learning process. And some stages were positive. There was other stages where they weren't so positive. I was kind of questioning what I'm doing. You know, is it good enough? And, you know, so the negative came in some aspects, and it was combating, you know, the positive. And I think that's just kind of normal, you know, when you're not really sure of yourself, when you're kind of new at something, you're going to have all these kinds of challenges that you have to face.
Right, but it kind of at least triggered or released, I should say, your inventive spirit, which allowed you then to go on and start thinking of other ideas. Because I think that may be just kind of a stumbling block. It reminds me of like the 4-minute mile, that it seemed like it couldn't be crossed. But once it did, then many people were able to bypass that, pass that level. And the same thing, I think that there's a kind of an issue with coming up with an idea and being creative. People are a little bit afraid of using that creative muscle. But once you do, it's just like any other muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger it becomes, and you can become more and more creative and just kind of opens your mind to other ideas.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what had happened to me is after the butterfly, in the process, even when I was starting to develop the butterfly, work on the packaging, the video tutorial, the directions, I already started thinking about other effects. You know, Patrick Wolford, he's over at Murphy's Magic. He's the one that eventually took on, you know, the butterfly. And I tell you, he's you know, great guy. The guy's a genius as far as, you know, knowing his magic stuff. Like I said, walking Tarbell encyclopedia. And I felt myself almost talking to him on a day-to-day basis with ideas, and it would be something like, yeah, this is a great idea, I'd like to see more, or no, there's something like this out there already, which had happened a few times. And I started just carrying a notepad with me and a pen, and sometimes I would come up with an idea, and I would just stop what I'm doing and document my idea, the date, time, all of that. So at least I have something to work off of. Sometimes it wouldn't even be the full idea. It would just be kind of a vision, and I would just write a little note of what that is so that way I could, you know, work on it.
Mark, do you ever wake up like in the middle of the night with an idea and then jot that idea down?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That had happened with my turbo tube effect. That's my third product out. I have Butterfly in a Box. I have another product that's called Magic Tape, but it isn't a magic effect. It just says, magician's props, do not touch or you'll disappear.
Yeah, and, like a yellow police tape kind of thing.
Right. So when I came up with Turbo Tube, that's kind of working on the premise of the mirror tube. which is actually called the Conradi, I believe, too. I'm saying that right.
Conradi.
Yeah. So that's an effect where you put a silk handkerchief in a tube, say, for example, it's red, and you make a magic pass, wave, whatever, and then all of a sudden the red changed to white. And I don't know, I don't even know how I came up with this idea, but I kind of woke up in the middle of the night, and I was jotting some notes down, and I thought, you know, this would really be neat if I took this tube and changed a little bit, modified it, and made it so when you make the change transformation, instead of reaching and pulling the handkerchief out to show the color change, instead have the silk fly out of the tube.
Okay.
So that I came up with a way to do that. So it's called the turbo tube. Now, another thing that I added to it is after I came up with a way to make this silk handkerchief fly out of the tube, I thought, well, that's kind of neat, but it would really be neat if when it flew out of the tube, confetti came out and kind of fell along with the silk and slowly fell down.
Yeah.
And I came up with a way to do that. After a few beta versions, I finally came up with a way to do that. So I kind of almost came up with a way to make a confetti shooter without using a CO2 cartridge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty, I like Turbo Tube. It's pretty, I think, genius, if I don't say myself, of how I came up with a way to make it shoot out. So I just kind of wanted to update it and change it a little bit and make it fun.
Sure.
And what's nice about that is, you know, you can use different size silks, I think up to like 18 inches. And instead of just making a color change, you could also do like a silk blendo, or you could make a handkerchief fly out that says happy birthday or happy holidays.
But the creative process of trying to come around that is something I think that people need to recognize, of course, that these things don't necessarily just happen all at once, that you had to, as you said, try a CO2 cartridge and other kinds of propulsion devices or whatever to make this work. So it's the research and trying to develop something that is workable and reasonable, and as you talked about Turbo Tube earlier, about not you know, being dangerous or, you know, having some issues, so it's not an easy thing to come up with ideas. Sometimes you have to kind of grind through it, and other times you might just come up in the middle of the night with an idea.
Right. Yeah. I think one thing that a lot of magicians probably don't realize is that they're already inventing, you know, inventing things when they're in their studio practicing. I'm sure there's at least, you know, a big handful of magicians that are trying to come up with new ways to do a steal or to hide something or to do a load. And so they're already inventing. They just need to go a few steps further and turn that into a workable, you know, magic product.
Right. And in doing that, do you usually come up with those ideas just on your own, or is it kind of in collaboration and you're kind of bouncing some ideas off of other people? What is your particular method for creating?
I guess it's on my own, but I do have, you know, a team of people, trusted team people.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show something, and they'll say, you know, Mark, that doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should try this way. So sometimes we need other people's eyes and ears to help us with our inventing process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some magicians out there also, and I could respect this. They have great ideas, but they just don't want to share them. They want to keep them to themselves.
That's true. Yeah. And they may never market those ideas. A lot of things are the presentations that are given. And that was something I was going to get into later, but I may as well mention now. And that has to do with just the creators versus the performers. They are not necessarily, you know, one and the same. A lot of guys are really good at trying to come up with, well, not trying, but actually coming up with new ideas, new concepts, and everything. And the performers are the ones who will have great presentations. Not that they're not creative themselves, because they're certainly creative because of the presentations. But it's actually they're the ones who are working out all the bugs and the lines and making sure, you know, night after night, whenever they're doing these things on stage, that that the audience is actually appreciating that, and that it really is a trick that is a mystery and entertaining. Now, most of the things that are invented, it seems like, I would say, and this is just my perception of this, are people who are employed full-time in another position outside of magic, but they have a passion for inventing and contributing to the magic community, these different ideas, and then they'll go on continuing to create new ideas. And then someone who is a performer will get a hold of these things and start putting them into their act. Let's say like David Copperfield on one extreme, for an example. Again, he's very creative as far as his presentations go, and but I don't know of any particular product that he has actually put out or on the market that was completely and totally invented exclusively by him. I mean, he's got people around him, you know, Chris Kenner and so many other people around him who are coming up with different ideas, who are creators. Like with Chris Angel, having Banachek and others who are kind of saying, okay, here's the idea, here's what you do, but there's actually a person who is performing that, who is the face of that particular trick, and so that trick becomes associated with that performer rather than the creator. Of course, the performer will give the credit later to say, well, this was, something created by, Danny Garcia or whomever else, in the credits. But they are still not as well known within the general community as it is the person who actually presents it. In your particular case, I think you told me that you actually have another full-time job that you're doing, so you're not a full-time professional magician, although obviously that you are involved with magic through the Aces Magic Club there in Chicago.
Right, that's correct. I think, having a full-time job is kind of helped me in a way with my creative process. It's a job that doesn't really entail mental thinking. It's more physical.
Yeah.
So because of that, it's almost like my brain is constantly working. I'm glad that I have a good boss, because it probably drives her crazy. But that's kind of where it all started, where I mentioned earlier carrying a notepad, because it got so crazy that if I didn't have something to write it down, I couldn't rely on my memory. I have ADD. It's hard to remember things as it is. So I started carrying a notepad and pen, and then it came really easy to be able to keep track of everything. Mm-hmm. Of course, I have about four different notepads, but I have it on paper.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you as well, Mark, I think it's important for some of the listeners who have these ideas about how to take them to market and kind of the process. So it's not just a creativity part of the trick itself, but actually getting it to market. Again, I've had people who have contacted me on multiple occasions saying, hey, I got this little idea, and what do I do next? How do I get this out? How do I promote this to the market, and how can I monetize this, basically? And so there was a process that obviously you had gone to get this to market. Can you kind of give an outline or a form? I mean, first of all, we've talked a little bit about your creative process, but then you talked to Steve Hart, who gave you some ideas and whatnot, and then you mentioned Murphy's Magic. So there's kind of a disconnect among those. Can you kind of tie those together for us?
Okay, so you want me to kind of answer how it all came to be as far as getting onto Murphy's Magic?
Yeah, well, from start to finish, I guess, yeah, that you had this creative process, and then how you got to Murphy's ultimately, and what Murphy's does for you, and et cetera.
Okay. Yeah, well, in the creative process, putting the video together and the directions and things, and also a very important thing, you want to know how much to charge, what your retail is going to be.
Exactly.
That's going to determine what you're going to make as an inventor. And there's a few different routes you could do. You could try to sell it on your own, or you could sell it through a distributor. There's pros and cons to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a very big database as far as contacts with magic shops and all that. So that would have entailed having to research and find emails and come up with a mailing list, phone numbers,
right,
and have to make phone calls and everything. With Murphy's, they have all those contacts already. So to me, it was worth it to make a little bit less money, but be able to sell in bulk. So, I get an order in and boom, it's done. I send the order, I work on making more or my next effect.
Right.
Now,
so you would make less per product, but you sell more of those.
Right, right. But at the same time, I would probably sell more through Murphy's than on my own.
Right. Because Murphy's, again, is a jobber who sells to wholesales, I guess, to the retailers. So you cannot buy, of course, directly from Murphy's, but they do have access to all the magic shops around the world, so people will order from Murphy's. So Murphy's will order from you, and then the retailers order from Murphy's.
That's correct, yeah. And in the process of putting Butterfly in a Box together, I mentioned to you that Steve Hart was helping me out, quite a bit with that, mm-hmm. as far as give me an idea of how the effect looks. When I would finish the trailer, I would send it to him, and he would kind of say, you might have to tweak this a little bit, tweak that. And then the packaging, that's also something important.
Boy, that really is, yeah. Let's talk a bit about that. How'd you come up with the packaging to make it attractive? Because it has to look good on the shelf.
Right. When I thought of Butterfly in a Box, I was really visualizing. My vision was to kind of make it look classy. At the same time, I wanted the packaging to be able to be affordable for me if I'm going to be purchasing in quantity. And that's one of the things I'm really, really impressed about is some of the packaging I see in Magic that I never really paid attention to before, but now I do. Like David Regal, his new effect, Clarity. Mm-hmm. I love the packaging on that. But I think what I wanted to do is I wanted to keep it simple. And I found a box. It's a kind of like a black gloss box. And I ordered one of those, a sample from a company. And I decided to put a butterfly on the front of the box. It's like a gold butterfly embossed image. And there's no text or anything. It doesn't say Butterfly in a Box. That's all it is. It's a gold butterfly on this glass box.
Yeah.
And then I decided to shrink wrap it. And boy, that really added to it. By the time I was done, I had one magician that I sent the product to for him to review. And one of the things he said is, it looks like something you'd find at Macy's.
Nice.
And it was a really great feeling because all I did was, I put a butterfly emblem. I had one printed on the box.
Mm-hmm.
Something simple, but yet elegant, and it was enough to also make it look mysterious. So that's been kind of like what I've been following as far as my knack of packaging, what I want to do.
Right, so that gets it to the market then. And again, I think that's ultimately what I was trying to get to was that process, because there are so many who have these different ideas. They've got a card trick or something, and how do I get that to the market? In this particular case, the kinds of things that you have been coming up with, Mark, have been something physical that one could not easily make or duplicate, whereas that there are a lot of guys who might come up with a card move or a trick or a new count or a buckle or, a triple lift or something. And once that is shown, it's like, okay, I got it. I can do that, and so therefore they need to put together some sort of a DVD that's going to be a quick download or something like that. I know Penguin, for an example, has a lot of, things like that, that once you've seen this, like, okay, got it. But, and if you share it with someone at a convention, you're not going to be able to monetize that. So a lot of guys will have you know, some ideas like that, which perhaps might best be a download again through Penguin or someone like that. But yours is, again, more of a physical type of a product. And for those who do come up with these kinds of ideas like you or like yours, should follow a similar path as far as trying to work on the packaging of it to get this to market. Or is that something, by the way, that Murphy's or whoever else, you know, might help you with trying to package?
Murphy's has been great. They have made, you know, recommendations for packaging when I was inquiring about them. But again, budget, you know, is always important. You got to know what your budget is. You got to take all of your costs. One of the mistakes I hear a lot from inventors is they don't do their math. What you really have to do is when you come up with an idea, if it's going to involve putting material together, you have to go on the internet, do searches. For example, let's say it's a clear plastic box.
Mm-hmm.
Go on Google, type in clear plastic box wholesale, and do some searches, and you're going to come up with a few different companies. Find out how much you could get the cheapest. You also want to factor in shipping. Very important. A lot of people don't factor in shipping. They just look at the cost. That shipping can make a difference. It could cut into your profit. So once you add up all the costs, and I mean you got to add up everything. I get so crazy with adding up everything, I actually factor in the packing tape, the length tape I use to pack a box. I know it sounds crazy. You know, all you have to do is figure out how much you're purchasing material for and just factor that in.
Sure.
You kind of have to do the math and break down the cost. So if you have tape that's $3.99, all right, for a roll, figure out how many feet are in that roll, and you got to kind of do the math and find out, okay, I'm using 12 inches of tape here for this box, so how many am I going to get out of this roll? So it's very important to take all of that, you know, in, because what you're going to do is you're going to then from there figure out, well, how much do I want to make for my labor then? Because, you see, the cost of the supplies, it's kind of just separate. You know,
right.
You're not making any money.
Those are just your hard sunk costs.
Right. And a lot of, you know, inventors won't
figure in their own time.
Look at that. Yeah, they're just so excited that they got a magic effect. And, oh, wow, you know, Murphy's is going to take it on. And if they don't do their math, they could end up actually having to lose money, you know, pay.
On the other hand, you really don't want to have greater expectations than what you think that, that you're worth. For an example, that if you're – I know I had helped someone publish a book one time, and they thought, well, it's worth – $150, and I'm saying perhaps so, however, that more realistically it should be, you know, if you want to sell a lot, it's going to be worth a lot less. Well, there's a lot of time it was involved in writing the book. I understand that. But you're going to sell a lot fewer, I think, at the higher prices. So there has to be, you know, some sort of a pricing point that you would come into, understanding that there, in your particular case, a lot of cost materials, for materials, and if you're thinking, well, you know, the time that I put into this has been, you know, for my research has, you know, was worth X dollars per hour, you know, that you're probably never going to be getting that back. You're going to be getting pennies on the hour, if that, when you actually go back to it. So you shouldn't, I guess, have any false expectations of what your what we call sweat equity, you know, would be worth.
Right. You know, and it's you know, very important that you said that, because, you know, that's very true. You are going to make some money, but you're also going to be putting in a lot of time that might not be, you know, might not seem like you're making a profit. It's kind of a labor of love,
mm-hmm.
You know. And as I mentioned earlier about the packaging, I just wanted to back up a moment here, because when we're talking about how there's some really impressive packaging on some of the magic products, for people that are thinking about coming out with a product, don't think, you know, that you have to have awesome packaging to sell your product. That's not the case. What I'm doing is I'm going the simple route, and I'm just, you know, coming up with different ways to be creative with my packaging, keep my costs down. For example, instead of having a printed box, I might have a label. Also, be very careful how you package everything in the box. I use a lot of, you know, styrofoam or the bubble wrap to keep everything protected, because when you ship to the supplier, the distributor, you don't want to have somebody emailing or calling you back saying, hey, you know, half of this stuff was damaged in transport.
Right.
So you're going to, you know, you got to really cover yourself, and you're going to, you know, win in the long run if you package everything so it's safe for transport. So just think of, you know, about that. Keep that in mind. I use cardboard, you know, regular folding cardboard box for my turbo tube, but I put a nice label on it.
Mm-hmm.
So at least with the label, they see what the effect is. It's kind of like almost like a logo for each trick, the label. Now, I heard something interesting recently, and that was it's a good idea to put your face on the label so people could associate who you are. So maybe they see you at a lecture and, oh, hey, there's so-and-so. You know, they kind of start associating you with the pictures you have on the products.
That's a good suggestion. I would certainly, you know, first of all, be saying, like, you know, Mark Presley presents Turbo Tube or Butterfly in a Box, you know, having that, and then on the back of the box, you know, having the picture. So you're emphasizing that, because we are a visual society more now than ever. I mean, when you're going to restaurants, there are so many that will have pictures, you know, like at Denny's or whatever. You'd order by the picture because the people are not reading. I don't know. Anyhow, but you're right. When you go to a convention or wherever, that they start to recognize your photo, it's the same way, like whenever that I may be at a convention and traveling and I'm in a hallway and I'm talking with someone and someone will turn around and say, I recognize that voice.
Right.
Because they've heard me on the podcast, but they wouldn't necessarily see my face because I don't have it on my, you know, on the blog every week there. And so I think that is important, that you would add your face somewhere where you start to get that recognition. But I think whenever you are designing the package, it is important to have your name. So this way that they begin to know that you are the creator of these effects and you're starting to have a series of successful effects, so that way that they recognize, well, whatever this guy is coming up with, I like what he has created. It's just like a band. You know, I had taught my boys as they were growing older, as they were growing up, the importance of knowing the names of the band. So when we were listening to the radio, I wouldn't say, what's the name of that tune? I'd say, what's the name of the group who's playing that? Because the point being is, if you like that music, you'll like something else that they do as well. Just like with an author, if you like, you know, a book that Stephen King wrote, you probably will like the next one, or you know, whomever else. I'm just saying, you know, that once you have been established as being a creator, people will like what you do,
right,
what you write, or whatever.
Right. Now, one thing that I wanted to kind of bring up, and you know, I kind of wonder if other inventors go through this. In fact, I talked to another magician recently who is talking about that he kind of goes through the similar feeling, and that is where, as an inventor, it almost, in a way, kind of seems isolated at times, like different than a performing magician. It's almost like we're in our own little world.
Yeah.
We're creating and inventing, and at one point, because I came up with four magic products within about 13 months, which I'm really proud of that accomplishment, because that involves a lot of things. It involves putting together the effects, the packaging, the directions, the video tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
I do all of that. I produce everything. I don't do anything outside of my company, which is Imaginator Magic. So, you know, there was one time where I was kind of like questioning myself, where I just wanted to take a step back and say, do I really want to do this? Is this really, you know, worth my time? I feel like my work isn't appreciated or credited enough. And, you know, sometimes that just comes off as insecurity, and that has to, you know, you get over that as you keep creating and getting more confident in what you do, and you kind of have a team helping you out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have magician friends that are supporting you. It you know, all comes together as far as like a support structure that'll help you get to, you know, where you want to go to. Because it was at one time not too long ago, like I said, I kind of wanted to just take a step back and reevaluate what I wanted to do. But it only took me a few days, and I bounced back. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is something I want to do. Mm-hmm. I wasn't planning on doing it, but this is what I want to do.
Yeah. Let me back up a moment. You were talking about making all the videos yourself. Do you have a little recording studio that you go to, or do you do it in a room of your house or in the kitchen, or where do you video these?
Well, I made a studio in my garage. It doesn't look like a garage. It looks like a party room now.
Yeah.
Like a backdrop in there. And I just set up the camera, videotape, and then I take it in the house and do all the editing. I use iMovie. That's an Apple product.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I do all the video editing. You could certainly have somebody do all that work for you, but that's going to also cut into, you know, your cost and everything. So if you happen to be handy with that, you know, go for it.
So you produce all of your own DVDs, and then you print those and do the labels and everything?
Right. I do all that. So, you know, it gets time consuming, but at the same time, when you start doing it enough, you start getting, you know, better and better at it.
Right. Yes.
And, you know, things will come, you know, smoother and faster.
Right.
That type of thing.
Well, great. That's been very helpful. I think, again, there are a lot of people who have different ideas out there, and they're wondering about how do I get this to market, and also those who are creative or wondering about other people's creative process. This has been quite enlightening and helpful to hear your perspective of this, Mark.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've just been having a great time. You know, I'm really thankful that Murphy's over there had taken on, you know, my products. In fact, if you had a little more time, I kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
And that is at that time when I was kind of going through a little funk, if I trying to figure out what I want to do with magic. Do I want to invent? Do I want to perform? During that time, I happened to be talking to Patrick over at Wolf and Murphy's Magic, and he said something that was really motivating, inspiring to me. And that, you know, one of the things he said is, Mark, our website, we have about 9,000 products. That's not even 30% of what comes into the door daily from other inventors.
Yeah.
He said, so you're way ahead of the game. You know, you got your foot in. And that's what really made me decide that this is what I want to do. Because when he said that, it really helped me take a step back and think, wow, they get that much magic in. And
oh, I'm sure they do. That's a question. How was it that you did get your foot in the door?
Basically, I just called them up. I sent them a video demo, video trailer,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't hear from them. So I called them, and I said, hey, I have this product out. Would you be interested? It turned out that they get so much stuff in, you know, they're inundated with magic that they didn't even see the email. So Patrick over there at Murphy said, yeah, send me a demo. Well, let me back up a moment. He asked me to send the YouTube link again.
Yeah.
And he watched it, and he said, could you send me the packaging for it, you know, the full product. So I sent it to them, and I was just blessed. They loved the effects, and I think they knew that it was going to be a success.
Mm-hmm.
I sold over 900 butterfly in a boxes so far.
Wow.
Right? And so that's what I also wanted to go over as far as inventors is, if you really want your product to stand out, we kind of talked about packaging and, you know, your budget and that type of thing. But you got to really make sure that your effect is going to grab attention, you know, because they get so much stuff. I don't know what they do with it, but
right.
You know, I don't know if it ends up in a back room or something, but, you know, you really want to do your homework, because a majority of the stuff, I imagine, is stuff that wasn't well thought of. They didn't do their homework. There could be another effect out there. It may not be well made. Even if you have a beta version of it, just do the best you can with making it as close as possible to the effect.
Mm-hmm. The final effect is going to be actually sold, yeah.
Right, yeah. And also, you know, I kind of grew up old school, and that is when you want a job, you go for it. You don't give up. You keep making, you know, phone calls and contacting them, and because they get so much, like I said, of other inventors, that you really want to try to be ahead of the game and contact them, shoot them an email, send them a video, that type of thing.
And kind of be persistent, I guess, is what you're saying.
Right, yeah, not stalking, though.
yeah, there's a fine line there. I think that's true. But I think a lot of people think that they've got a beautiful baby and they don't like someone saying that it's ugly. And so, but you have to recognize maybe this is still the beta or maybe not as good, and not be discouraged, but continue to go on and to create something new, better, and might be more marketable. I mean, just because that your close-knit friends are saying, hey, that's great, you ought to take that to market, you're going to make $1 million or whatever on this. Yeah, you could be a hundred heir, you know, eventually, if you sell a bunch of these products. But I'm sure, as you say, that Murphy's is going to be getting, and other places are going to be getting these requests all the time. But again, to be persistent and let them tell you, no, this is not going to work, or it needs to be tweaked, or come back with us with a different idea. But you need to get some feedback, I think, ultimately.
Right. And, you know, another thing I wanted to share with you is, just because you think that your effect is great, it's awesome, you know, your friends are giving you support, of course, you know, your friends and family should give you support. And even if it is a great effect, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to like it. I just want to warn you, because when my butterfly in a box came out, you know, I was Googling my name, and I was having fun, you know, because I wasn't expecting to come across websites where my butterfly in a box effect description was in Chinese,
mm-hmm.
you know, in other countries. And then you get into going to magic social websites like Magic Cafe and that type of thing. And, you know, hearing people talk about your effect, some positive, some not positive.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to really be prepared.
And kind of thick skin to a degree.
Right. Which I didn't, but now, I've grown so much, because of the inventing process. And, you know, when I was kind of questioning myself, you know, the people at Murphy said, Mark, look at your sales. He's like, people like it. You're not going to, your effect isn't going to impress everybody. A lot of that comes with, jealousy, you know, and there's vampires out there in the magic community that aren't happy with themselves. And the only way to make themselves happy is to try to put you down, you know, say remarks or like almost like bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to just put that aside and try your best not to feel like you want to retaliate. A lot of famous people, that's why they have people that do all that kind of work for them. You know, if there's things on the internet that shouldn't be and all that, they do all that research and clear things up for them. But most actors and things don't surf on the internet. Googling their own name, because it'll kill you, you know, the negative things. So you really got to kind of just not give in to
That's true. You know, I think I'd heard Teller say something to that effect, that he never reads reviews, positive, negative, anything. I mean, he creates and he performs and does what he does, and the ticket sales will speak for themselves, regardless of whatever the critics say. I had read some quote so many years ago, a critic is a long distance, like a long distance runner without any legs.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
So, anyhow, I wanted to thank you very much for kind of giving us your process, and hopefully this will be kind of inspirational to others who might have some idea about how that they want to go about with their creative process, and maybe trying your method or try and move things onto the market then too. So Now, if people want to try to get hold of you or to, for a further conversation, would you give out your email address as well as a website where they might find some of these products?
Oh, yeah. My website is imaginatormagic.com. And I also go by The Imaginator. I have a blog. A lot of people, have been visiting. I've kind of become known as The Imaginator.
Yeah.
And you can reach me also at marksmagic@comcast.net. And, if you have any ideas, and you'd like to, help out, you'd like me to try to help out, consult you, I'd be happy, because that's one of the areas where I'm really kind of looking to go, is producing, things for other magicians, and, just being able to help out and give back.
Right. Well, that's awfully gracious of you to be able to offer that out to everybody then as well. Well, as we start to close this podcast, that the title, of course, of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question then to you is, what is your magic word? What is it that you live by? What is something that's important to you?
What is my magic word?
Yeah, it could be a word or a phrase or something. And since we've been talking about creativity and everything, that perhaps something might come to mind.
Well, let's see. You know what? I think that would be a good thing to think about to put on my mission statement.
I'm glad to hear that you have a mission statement.
Right. You know what? I would just say have fun and create.
Create.
Sounds good. Try to do your best with coming up with your own ideas and following your dream, and use the people around you, your friends and family, is your support system, and hopefully you'll create something that will inspire others to create as well.
Wow, that's a good way of kind of leaving it like that, so that way that it does sound like some inspirational words there. Well, Mark Presley, thank you very much. I appreciate you being on The Magic Word here for this.
Okay, well, thank you again.
All right, that was Mark Presley, and for The Magic Word, this is Scotty out.